The test is in four parts, part 1, part 2, part 3, and part 4. Now look at part 1.
Part 1.
You will hear a conversation between a male clerk in a hire company and a woman customer. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 5. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 5.
Hello, welcome to Harry's Hire Company. How can I help you?
Oh, hi, yes. I've come in to find out about renting stuff for a 21st birthday party.
Yes, of course. First of all, what date is the party?
It's next Saturday. That was the closest we could get to the actual birthday, which is the 22nd of November. Gosh, it's hard to believe it was 21 years ago. Seems like yesterday.
So the 18th of November?
No, sorry. I meant the following Saturday, the 25th.
Okay, we have just about everything here. Tableware, marquees, you name it, we rent it. What size of event are we talking about here?
Yes, that's a good question. We were planning to have about 40 people, but you know how these things grow, and it went up to 60 at one stage. I think it's back to 55 now. Yes, that's right. It was all getting a bit out of hand.
Okay. And what kind of catering and entertainment are you having? We can help with entertainment hire too. You know, if you need microphones or a sound system.
Oh, that's good. We've booked a catering company and they're providing a meal. It's nothing elaborate, just finger food snacks and then a simple buffet meal. So we'll need all the usual dinner plates and bowls. I suppose 5 dozen of everything. Oh, and knives and forks too, 5 dozen sets. We won't need any cooking equipment because the caterers will do that. And they're providing tea and coffee as well.
I see. And do you need any tables or chairs?
Well, not tables, because we wouldn't have room for them. But I suppose some extra chairs might come in handy. What type do you have?
Come over here and I'll show you. We have a couple of different kinds. We do have the folding wooden ones, like these. But the most popular ones are just those stackable plastic garden chairs. We rent a lot of those.
Yes, the plastic ones look great. Maybe 40 of those.
Okay. I'm making a list here as we speak. Was there anything else? Oh, do you want small or medium glasses? People generally want both sizes.
Yeah, better get both kinds. 4 dozen of each. And what else? The caterers are supplying a punch bowl, so that's okay. Oh, I know. What about 6 ice buckets for keeping the drinks cold? We're providing all the drinks because I have a friend who's helping us with that. I suppose this is going to get very expensive.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 6 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 6 to 10.
Well, let's talk about our packages and rental deals. Firstly, what day do you want to collect the equipment?
Oh, I'm not sure. Does that make a difference to the price?
Well, the weekend package deal is to pick up after 5 p.m. on Friday and drop off before 10 a.m. on Monday. That will be $1,600 plus tax. If you want to save a bit of money, you can collect the equipment on the day of the party before 5 p.m. and drop off on the Monday before 10 a.m. and that will be $1,350 plus tax. That's called the same day package. Your party numbers come between our small and medium price packages, I'm afraid. So in fact, you could rent a few extra of everything for the same price.
I see. Well, we're not inviting more guests. I think we have quite enough already. Are there any other hidden charges with those packages?
No, not really. But if you want us to drop off and pick up at your house, there is an extra home delivery charge of $50, provided you live within 10 kilometres of here. Oh, and if you want to take out breakage insurance, that's a $60 flat fee. Otherwise, you pay for every item you break at the replacement cost.
Wow, so how much is that then? I bet that soon adds up.
Well, yes, it does a bit. Let's see. Tableware is $3.55 apiece, small glasses are $3.50, and medium glasses are $4.40. Oh, and if you break a chair, they're expensive, $15 each. And you'll be surprised what happens when the party gets going.
Yes, insurance sounds like a good idea. And I think I'll take the weekend package deal, thanks. It's much more convenient, isn't it? And not much more expensive.
Okay, so let's take a few details then. Your name?
Oh, it's Susan Millins.
Is that Miller?
No, it's M-I-L-L-I-N-S.
Right, and your address, please?
28B Sandstone Close, Martinsborough.
And just to confirm the order, the medium-sized party weekend package with breakage insurance. And did you want to collect this yourself?
Yes, thank you. I do live within 10Ks, but I don't want to pay any extra charges. I'll get my son to help me.
Okay. We'll need an emergency contact number, just in case anything goes wrong. Oh, and credit card details, of course.
Oh, yes, of course. The phone number is 084-398-7695.
Okay, thank you. And now the credit card.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part two.
Part two. You will hear a receptionist, Doreen, talking to a group of parents about the Daisy Daycare Centre. First, you have time to look at questions 11 to 17. Now listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 17.
Hello everyone. I'm Doreen, the receptionist at the Daisy Childcare Centre. Thank you all for coming to our open evening. I'll just show you round and tell you a bit about the place. First of all, I will have to ask you to leave your sneakers and sandals, etc. here on the shoe rack, just inside the main door. You know how the young ones love crawling around the floor, so our policy is no street footwear inside. As you can see, our facility is very open plan. There are lots of different activity areas, and we like to have pretty good visibility throughout the centre. This central area to the left is where we all gather for stories, songs, and some games. That's why the big circular carpet is there. Everyone comes to sit there two or three times a day. I can see some of you looking at our TV. Some parents worry that we might just dump the kids there to watch rubbish all day. But of course that's not the case. In fact, we only use it occasionally. For example, we use it if we have a story on a DVD, and then we get the kids to do a bit of acting based on that. That bookcase there beside the TV gets a lot of use, though. Some of the older kids choose to sit and read or look at picture books in their free time, but we never allow them unsupervised TV. If you look along the wall on the far side of the little gate leading into the main room, you can see our kitchen play area. It has lots of utensils, pots and pans. And that cupboard closer to the corner is the dress-up cupboard. That's a very popular area, with the boys as well as the girls. You'd be surprised how much the boys get into acting and make-believe. Now over here, opposite the gate and behind the big lunch table, are the sinks and the painting area, and then the doors to the outside. To the right of those outside doors, you can see hooks and little cubby holes on the wall for coats, bags and outdoor shoes. The children can keep slippers in there, but most of them run around indoors in their socks or bare feet. If you can bear it, I think we should pop out into the cold for a moment to have a look round outdoors. We'll just stay under the veranda. The sandpit is over there at the far left of the outside area, and that box next to it is storage space for buckets and spades, and lots of trucks and diggers to push around or even ride on. The slide beside that is popular, and so are the three climbing walls over by the fence. Some parents think that's a bit adventurous for preschoolers, but the older ones love them. The ground is covered with bark, so it's not a harsh surface when they do fall. The ordinary swings and a tire swing are here in front, where we can keep an eye on everyone, and then the chickens are way over on the far right, so they can have a bit of peace and quiet occasionally. Okay, so let's go back inside, and I can talk about our rules and policies.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 18 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 18 to 20.
As you probably already know, the government sets limits on adult-child ratios, but we try to improve on those wherever we can. There are different ratios for under and over 2-year-olds. For the under 2s, the rules are 1 adult to 4 children. And we basically stick to that, except that we have an extra roving staff member with no allocated children who helps out wherever there's a need. The older kids have a 1-to-8 ratio, and again we try to have an extra staff member on site. All of our staff are fully qualified, but we do have trainees from the local polytech at certain times of year. We do have pretty strict rules about pickup times here. It's a real problem if parents are late, and we end up with far too many kids for the number of staff. So we ask you to be very punctual about collecting your children. We have had to ask a couple of consistently late parents to leave, but of course this is only a last resort. We have quite a long waiting list here, especially for the over 2s, but you're welcome to put your name down. The average lead time is usually about 9 months, but sometimes we get unexpected vacancies. For example, maybe a family has to move to another city for work or something, so their child is withdrawn. This means, if you're lucky, your child could be admitted in 3 months or so. Now, are there any questions?
That is the end of part 2.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part 3.
Part 3.
You will hear a conversation between a tutor and 2 students who are preparing for an English literature test. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 24. Listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 24.
Hello, Lorna, Ian. Glad you could make it. You're the only two who put your names down for this literature tutorial, so let's get started, shall we? I want to run over some aspects of the novel The Secret Garden with you before the test next week. Be sure to take some notes and ask questions if you need to.
Hey, Lorna, have you got a spare pen?
Sure, here you are.
Okay, so the story follows two key characters. You should refer to them as protagonists, who go by the names of Mary Lennox and Colin Craven. The story is set shortly after the turn of the 20th century, and the narrative tracks the development of the protagonists as they learn to overcome their own personal troubles together.
That's quite a common storyline, isn't it?
Yes, you're right, Lorna. So what can you tell me about the character of Mary?
Well, in the beginning, she is an angry, rude child who is orphaned after a cholera outbreak and forced to leave India and move to the United Kingdom to her uncle's house in Yorkshire.
That's right. And there she meets Colin, who spends his days in an isolated room, believing himself to be permanently crippled, with no hope of ever gaining the ability to walk. The two strike up a friendship, and gradually learn, by encouraging each other, that they can both become healthy, happy and fulfilled in life.
Will we need to remember a lot of these details for the exam?
Just the basic outline. Examiners don't want to read a plot summary. They know what the book is about. Focus on narrative techniques instead, such as point of view.
What's that mean?
It's all about how we see the story. This story, for example, is written from the perspective of what is called an omniscient narrator. Omniscient means all-knowing. So, as readers, we get to see how all the characters feel about things, what they like and don't like, and what their motivations are in the story.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 25 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 25 to 30.
Won't it be hard to write a technical analysis? After all, it's a kid's book.
Well, it was initially pitched at adults, you know. But over the years, it has become seen as a more youth-orientated work. And you're right in a sense. The simple vocabulary and absence of foreshadowing make the story very easy to follow and ideally suited for children. But that doesn't mean there isn't much to analyse. Look at the symbolism, for instance.
Symbols are things, right? Material things, like objects that stand for abstract ideas.
Absolutely, yes. And the author uses many of them. There's the robin redbreast, for example, which symbolises the wise and gentle nature that Mary will soon adopt. Note that the robin is described as not at all like the birds in India. Roses are used as well, as a personal symbol for Mistress Craven. You'll see they're always mentioned alongside her name, and Mistress Craven's portrait can also be interpreted as a symbol of her spirit.
Are symbols just another name for motifs?
No, motifs are a bit different. They don't have as direct a connection with something the way that a symbol does. Motifs are simply recurring elements of the story that support the mood.
Are there any in this novel?
Yes, two very important ones. The Garden of Eden is a motif. It comes up a few times in connection with the garden of the story. And then you've got the role that secrets play in the story. In the beginning, everything is steeped in secrecy, and slowly the characters share their secrets, and in the process move from darkness to lightness, metaphorically. But also, in the case of Colin, quite literally. His room in the beginning has the curtains drawn, and he appears at the end in the brightness of the garden.
Anything else we need to know about?
Yes. Nearly all novels explore universal concepts that everyone has experienced. Things like love, family, loneliness, friendship. These are called themes. The Secret Garden has a few themes that all center on the idea of connections. The novel explores, for example, the way that health can determine and be determined by our outlook on life. As Colin's health improves, so too do his perceptions of his strength and possibility. The author also examines the link between our environment and our physical and emotional prosperity. The dark, cramped rooms of the manor house stifle the development of our protagonists. The garden and natural environments allow them to blossom, just as the flowers do. Finally, this book looks at connections between individuals, namely Mary and Colin. This necessity of human companionship is the novel's most significant theme, because none of their development as individuals would have occurred without their knowing each other. Well, that about sums it up, I think.
That's a great help. Thanks.
Yes, thanks very much.
That is the end of part three.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part four.
Part four.
You will hear a lecture on climate change. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
This lecture in environmental studies is on the topic of human influence on climate change. First, I'll outline some of the factors affecting climate, then go on to discuss what has already occurred, and finish up by speculating on the effects. Previously, we've covered how factors such as ocean currents and prevailing winds affect climate change naturally. However, the influence of human activity on climate is what I'll talk about today. At first, the effect on the climate was relatively small. Trees were cut down to provide fuel for fires, and, as we know, trees absorb carbon dioxide and produce oxygen, so the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere would have increased, but not noticeably. So, in what ways has human activity really impacted on the climate? A major contributor was the advent of the Industrial Revolution at the end of the 18th century, combined with the invention of the combustion engine. In addition, Earth's burgeoning population has had a marked effect on climate. The first two factors saw increased amounts of carbon dioxide being released into the atmosphere from the burning of fossil fuels, such as coal and oil. The final one, human expansion, has resulted in deforestation on such a scale that the extra carbon dioxide in the air cannot be soaked up and converted into oxygen by the remaining trees. Okay, so what has already happened? Well, global temperatures have risen by 0.6 degrees Celsius in the last 130 years. Levels of carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide gases have escalated. Carbon dioxide concentrations have climbed by 30%, and methane levels have increased by 145% since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. Gas, produced by fossil fuel extraction, livestock, and paddy fields, is primarily responsible for the growth of methane levels. Nitrous oxide, or N2O, comes from natural sources, wet tropical forests, for instance. But it is also produced by human-related activities, such as agriculture, which uses synthetic nitrogen fertilizers, rubbish disposal systems, and vehicle emissions. How do gases like carbon dioxide and methane affect the climate? Well, this is what we call the greenhouse effect. Under normal conditions, the sun's rays hit the Earth and some are reflected back into space. However, these gases, CO2 and methane, create a barrier in the atmosphere, which prevents a proportion of the sun's rays from being reflected back into space. And, instead, the gases become trapped in the atmosphere. It's simple, really. Because the sun's rays can't escape, the Earth heats up. What are the possible effects? Firstly, a rise in sea levels. We already know that the Arctic ice cap has melted and shrunk considerably, and great chunks of ice have been lost from Antarctica. In 1998, it was reported that 46 million people lived in areas at risk of flooding, and the number of people at risk will increase significantly if sea levels rise. It is estimated that a rise of only 50 centimeters would put that number at 92 million. Further projections would see a rise of 1 meter put 118 million people in danger of losing their homes and livelihoods, not to mention the loss of prime, fertile farmland. Experts predict a rise of at least 50 centimeters over the next 50 years or so. Secondly, there would be a modification of vegetation zones, with changes in the boundaries between grassland, shrubland, forest, and desert. This is already causing famine in arid areas of northeastern Africa, and has instigated, and will continue to instigate, mass movements of people away from dry regions. What we are seeing now is only the first stage, with temporary camps for climate refugees already at overcapacity. In the future, there will be significant migration resulting in extreme overcrowding of towns and cities. Another potentially disastrous effect of climate change is an increase in the range and distribution of pests, which could bring about an increase in the prevalence of certain diseases. If we think of the malaria-carrying mosquito, for example, which thrives in warmer regions, at the moment, about 45% of the world's population is exposed to malaria. But, with an increase in temperature, there will be many millions more cases of malaria a year. The last effect I'm going to mention today is the change in ecosystems. Global warming will influence species composition for both fauna and flora, such that some animal species will disappear and others will multiply. And it'll be the same for plants and trees. It is predicted that around 2/3 of the world's forests will undergo major changes of some kind. Scientists also expect deserts will become hotter, and, of course, desertification will continue at an increasingly worrying rate, and will become harder, if not impossible, to reverse. What could we do to stop the process? Well, that's the subject of next week's lecture. So, I hope to see you all there.
That is the end of part 4.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.